elder catch so I could pull it off her spear, and then I got busy winding the rope through the gills of all six of the dead fish. It wasn't very pretty, and might attract bloodthirsty predators, but there was no other way. "Can you grab some water?" I said while concentrating on my project. All I had to do was tie it off and we were ready. "I want to..." A powerful dinosaur roar shook my bones and almost made me drop the fish rope. "I vote we leave right this second," I urged as I fumbled with the finished cord. All the fish slid down the line so they sat at the bottom, and the looped rope was perfect to put my arm through so I could sling the fish over my shoulder. I felt as much as heard the next few roars. They weren't the friendly honks and horseplay of the dinosaurs across the lake. The bellows were throaty and commanding, like from a Tyrannosaurus Rex, at least as I knew it from television. There was more than one, but less than 100.
"Agreed,"
Sheila said in a hushed voice. We were faced with a new problem. We now had two pots to carry along with our spears and the fish. It was a classic loadout problem for me to solve, but it wasn't really that difficult, even under pressure. "I'll carry both pots," I said to Sheila as she lifted the full water pot up from the bank, "so you can carry both spears."
"Where's your spear?"
she asked as she set the water pot on top of the one I'd filled with clay.
"What the?"
I scanned the shore and didn't see my weapon. I knew it was close because I just had it, but so were giant dinos.
"Leave it. We have to go, now."
I tried to sound confident rather than panicky, but I was scared shitless. In 5 seconds, I had the water pot balanced on top of the other one and then lifted them both from the ground. The stack seemed stable, and I nodded to Sheila. Then we jogged as fast as I could manage without spilling the water. We headed into the trees back toward our cave and away from the sound of the roaring dinosaurs. I tried my hardest to keep up, but the best I could manage for a long period was a fast walk. Sheila stayed within eyesight, but went ahead a bit to ensure there weren't predators lying in wait. I caught up with her while she looked at the jungle behind us with her spear raised in a throwing position.
"Oh shit, what do you see?"
I whispered as I waited next to her. The jungle was so thick we couldn't see much farther than the distance of a good spear throw, so I expected a toss at any second. The roaring and commotion of giant footsteps kept getting louder. It was obvious the massive creatures were getting closer, and my brain started pumping even more adrenaline through my muscles.
"I thought I saw movement. We must run."
Despite everything, she kept her cool and spoke in her usual dry Aussie voice.
"Just go,"
I said with a massive effort to be level-headed as well.
"I won't lose you."
She led us forward, and I almost managed to run. I was already in need of a short rest to catch my breath, but I ignored the pain. It pissed me off my physical conditioning was so lame. I really hoped my lack of fitness wasn't about to get me killed. The cracks and chaos of falling trees and breaking branches rumbled from the surrounding jungle.
"Fuck! That was close!"
I shouted, but then realized we were trying to be stealthy, and I shut my mouth with a snap. Sheila was only a little ways ahead, and I did my best to keep up. While I fast-walked, a flock of tiny red birds got spooked out of the dense cover to my right. One of them turned and pecked at my fish for a few seconds, but then flew on. They were fleeing from something that had scared them. A moment later, I was passed by a large four-legged animal barking and yipping, kind of like a dog. It sported woolly gray fur with big black dots all over. Its whip-like tail clipped my right knee as it shot by, though it didn't even give me a sideways glance before it hopped over a downed tree and disappeared.
"We must hurry,"
Sheila said with more desperation in her voice than in her previous instructions.
"There is an apex predator coming. Be prepared to drop the pots and run if you need to."
Fuck. She didn't have to tell me to run, but I didn't want to drop anything we'd worked for. We'd just have to come back for it or make replacements, which would put us even further behind schedule.
"Say no more,"
I replied in a determined voice. She nodded grimly and led us into the vines and undergrowth of the jungle. I fast-walked a short ways and ran into her at the edge of a large creek.
"This is the stream that goes through our redwood forest, Victor. This way."
She pointed upstream and led the way ahead of me again. A long, primal rumble from close behind almost made me jump out of my boots. I thought about dumping all my shit, but I resolved to hold on to it until the last second. I pushed myself and walked-jogged behind Sheila on what looked like a game trail next to the stream. We hadn't gone far on the path when a small tree fell over a few yards to my right. An honest-to-God triceratops plowed it over and ran almost right into me. Oh, shit. Oh, shit! Run, Sheila! I yelled as I skidded to a halt before it hit me. It was as big as a Mack truck and sported two long horns above its eyes and a shorter one on its nose. The giant crest behind its head was colored red and orange, like plumage behind a peacock. I wasn't sure it even saw me, but it did see the stream. A moment before he squashed me, the trike turned on the game trail and lumbered on all fours behind Sheila. I got moving again, just as another dino bolted out of the undergrowth. It looked like a small ostrich, with black feathers and a long black neck. The head was distinctly lizard-like and hung low to the ground as its gangly pair of legs pumped hard to vacate the jungle. It missed me by a few feet and shot out into the stream without the slightest effort to slow down. I didn't watch it long, but it crossed the water and disappeared into the leaves on the far bank. Sheila and I followed the game trail for a few more minutes. Spooked wildlife ran, flew, and hopped in the dense jungle all around us. Most were smaller lizards, birds, and rodents instead of proper dinosaurs. The exceptions were the growing number of trikes running by. The sounds of pursuit chased all of us along the stream and toward the redwood forest.
"These animals know what's coming," she said when I caught up to her next to a small sequoia.
A gut-shattering roar followed her words, and several similar yells answered from the edge of the jungle. I associated the sounds with dinosaurs fighting each other, and the screams and counter-screams were deafening. More of the trikes came running out of the thicker jungle like they'd been kicked into overdrive.
"Shit, watch out!" I shouted.
We both scrambled to the backside of our tree as several trikes ran by. Some of them turned their horns in our direction as if to dare us to try to stop them. The grim sounds of battle probably meant some of their number were getting left behind.
"We should follow them,"
I suggested when my breathing allowed.
"Safety in numbers,"
I added as I fumbled with the pots to get them to line up.
"I will go first,"
Sheila replied. She pushed off from the tree after she looked toward the thunderous commotion behind us. I looked back there too, but only saw green foliage. The fight seemed to be just beyond what we could see through the leaves, but that was very close, and the vibration of the bellows rattled my ribs.
"Fuck, fuck, fuck,"
I repeated as I got moving again. I had the distinct impression I was the last zebra in the herd, and the lion was hiding behind the thin curtain of green leaves. My legs were going numb with terror, but I still pushed them to run faster. Another series of howls ripped through the forest behind me, but they soon became a painful-sounding screech and wail. The noise somehow caused my heart to beat in triple time, and every agonizing breath I sucked into my lungs seemed to echo in my ears. I made it to a full run for a minute or so before I figured I wasn't going to be grabbed from behind and dragged to my death. My heart reached a limit, too, so I had to slow back down. The water sloshed in the pot, but even at breakneck speeds, I was getting good at keeping it just below the rim.
"They are heading toward the cave," Sheila said with a little breathlessness. "We will follow them."
She gripped her spear and waved me where the trikes were going.
"I'll stay right behind you,"
I gasped, sounding like I'd crushed the world record for the 100-yard dash. My heart and lungs felt like they were trying to kill me. As we cleared the last bits of the jungle and entered the redwoods, I caught sight of about 8 or 9 of the trikes, including 2 that were about half the size of the others. Their lizard-like skin was gray with vertical black stripes, and they all had vibrant colors along the edge of their crests, colors blurred in the sunlight as they swiveled their heads to watch us run behind them.
"They look very ferocious," Sheila said at one point. "Those horns would make formidable weapons."
I used the calm to pop one of them in my IQ. Identification, dinosaur, Triceratops prorsus, male.
"I think these are vegetarian,"
I managed to say. The battle cries were not far enough behind us for my liking, but my heart was about to shoot its way out of my ribcage if I didn't rest for 60 seconds. After a short break, Sheila trotted ahead and I followed close behind. In the open redwood forest, we could both see a good distance, so we didn't have to worry about what was ahead. Behind us, the commotion of the dinosaur brawl faded, which had me thinking the stars, gods, aliens, or whatever would listen. If these truck-sized dinosaurs were on the run from a predator, what hope did Sheila and I have with our little spears? We'd run and stopped several times as we crossed through the grove, and now I saw something I recognized.
"Are we back at the cave?"
I finally asked, barely able to talk. Sheila replied by nodding. Then she motioned ahead, and we crossed the last 100 yards through the redwoods. When she reached the pterodactyl's tree, She looked up as we had done before leaving. Dino Bird looked down at her with curiosity and gave a don't-bother-me squawk. We'd followed the herd of Triceratops through the forest, and by a lucky coincidence, they now gathered on the hillside below our cave. They must have thought the danger had passed, because they were taking the time to chomp the bushes and small trees with the berries. I couldn't hear the predator anymore, so I figured that we were safe. I walked the final few yards up the ramp to the cave and looked down at what I'd brought. The pot of water survived pretty well, but I lost about a third of what I'd pulled from the lake. I did better with the clay soil because that couldn't slosh out. The fish had slammed against my uniform shirt the whole time, soaking my back with fish juices. I was going to smell awful from my efforts, but it was a great haul. There was enough fish for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Even though my sore arms felt like I was carrying cinder blocks, I was proud I didn't have to drop it all and run. We escaped whatever had chased the trikes away from the lake, and I gained valuable knowledge of the world around us while bringing home the bacon.
"Didn't you say morning was the safe time of day?"
I asked Sheila just before we entered the cave.
"Yes,"
she replied with a deadpan expression.
"It is."
Chapter 8
Sheila and I walked into the cave weary but victorious. After I set down the pots of clay and water, I gave the string of fish to Galmine. I let Sheila sit down first to be polite, but then I collapsed in a heap next to her. Galmine was cooking our fish before I could breathe and speak normally. The carnivorous predator Sheila and I evaded was still out there, and I was convinced it was coming for us. I only allowed myself to relax when I figured out the trikes were our early warning system. I just have to check that they were still grazing peacefully outside our cave every few minutes. Sheila told the others about our journey, including our stop near the volcano, our time in the lake, and the frantic run home. Galmine and Trell needed to know where we were, in case we didn't come back the next time. Trell remained behind her curtain, but Galmine tended to the fish while we filled her in. When Sheila mentioned the volcano, I hoped our gray-skinned friend would volunteer her experience there, but she never took her eyes off the sizzling meat.
"These fish look delicious," Galmine remarked as she poked them with the wooden spoon. "You two did great."
"Sheila's the fisherwoman, and I'm just the delivery boy," I said as I bumped elbows with my feline warrior friend. The smoky smell of the fillets stirred up good memories of fishing with my dad and then cooking our catch with my mom. Though, to be fair, I never had to work as hard as I did for these fish.
"Victor did an excellent job leading and carrying our supplies back home. If he hadn't been there, I might have left our supplies when the big dinosaur attacked. Then I would have been forced to go back later and collect them."
Sheila poked a piece of firewood at the edge of the fire pit.
"Ha! I doubt that. I never had time to drop it off because I was trying to keep up with you."
It's hard to say exactly what I thought when we were on the run from the mystery dinosaur, but a good part of my motivation was that Sheila said she liked strong men. My bravery was real, though. It couldn't be faked in the unforgiving wilderness. It felt good to know she was impressed.
"You have both earned a tasty meal," Galmine added. "That's all I know."
It did smell incredible. Even Jinx nosed around the edge of the fire, searching for ways to snatch a fish while we talked. "Go hang out over there," I ordered the little bird, while pointing to the pile of wood near Trell's curtain. After my verbal command, I tested a mental idea that he shouldn't bother Trell this time. I hadn't seen her since Sheila and I left earlier, and I wasn't sure if her mood was better or worse. Better to play it safe. I was convinced Jinx pouted at me before he turned and scrambled over to the small wood pile. He did not go under Trell's curtain, which seemed to confirm that my mental instruction had worked. It was an interesting new aspect of my taming skill, and I needed time to explore how I could make it work for me. Researching Jinx was item 400 on my to-do list for the day. "We have so much to get done," I said. "We still need to get firewood. We need an axe so we can start cutting trees. We need a turnstile. We need cord."
"Victor,"
Galmine interrupted,
"don't worry about that. My cord is already as tall as me." She pointed to the woodpile. "Trell told me to put it back there so it didn't catch fire over here."
I looked at Trell's nook. She usually replied when her name was mentioned in passing, but this time she didn't get involved. Even Jinx warily eyed her curtain as if he knew who was back there. Sure enough, I saw a neat coil of the cord by the woodpile. I expected her to spend the whole time ripping the leaves because she was so slow twisting the strands into the cord. But somehow, she'd ripped apart most of the leaves and made an impressive length of rope.
"How the heck did you get it all done?"
I asked the green-eyed beauty. I thought we were kind of unfair giving you that task.
"You thought I was too slow," she answered without any hostility.
"I know.
But Trell gave me some tips, so I went much faster."
"I'm glad she was so helpful," I said with all honesty. "I was sweating bullets while we were outside because of all the things we have to do today. This is a real relief."
"Well, if Victor hadn't allowed you to do it the wrong way, I wouldn't need to correct it,"
Trell commented as she slid the curtain aside. "You've got to be kidding me," I shot back in anger, totally ready to engage her in a verbal dogfight. "I didn't show her how to do it. Sheila showed us both. I'd been sick of her shit since before I left the cave the last time. I tried to be decent to her by using her full name, but apparently that didn't count for squat."
"You failed to maximize her efficiency,"
Trell added a dramatic sigh as she made her way to the fire. She walked on her alien spider legs, which made her sexy human body do its floaty trick a few inches off the ground.
"After all your fancy talk about wanting to help us and make things better, you blame someone else when I call out your failure."
I hated that she made me consider her nonsense, but something in her words made me unable to reply right then. I wasn't blaming anyone for my mistakes. Sheila did teach us. That wasn't a cop-out. What was I missing? Was it the way she said it? Her tone?
"You think you're so smart, dreaming up new ways to do your silly little jobs, and you want to get them done as fast as possible, right?"
Trell continued before anyone could interrupt her.
"Well, I like to see things done the right way, even when I don't actually care about them. I think of it as male quality control."
She laughed. "My silly jobs? What the fuck? That wasn't right." But I remained bothered by something else she said, and it had nothing to do with my methods or her unreasonable accusations. It took a few more seconds before the answer caught up with me, and it finally released my tongue.
"You called me Victor!"
I blurted out with incredulity instead of anger.
"Of course I did, fool,"
the Spider-Woman said as if it was super obvious.
"You used my proper name before you departed earlier, and even though you are a worthless male, my refined sense of honor demands I also use your name."
Trell never looked at me as she spoke. It was probably a good thing, because I'm sure my mouth hung open in disbelief. "You are totally wrong about me, but thanks, Trell, for at least talking," I started to say.
"Victor must call me Trell Idil Iria,"
I groaned because it was clear I'd gotten nowhere with her, but Sheila interrupted us both.
"Please, Trell, allow Victor to call you by your first name so we may address each other as efficiently as possible,"
Sheila said as if in difficult negotiations.
"You do not make me or Galmine address you by your full name."
"But you are not males,"
Trell replied with apparent frustration. Sheila held Trell's gaze and made no effort to say anything else or further justify herself. It was hard to say for sure, given Trell's all-black eyes, but I'm pretty certain I saw her roll them a couple of times before she exhaled heavily.
"Fine,"
Trell declared, creating extra syllables of disappointment in the word.
"Victor may call me Trell. At least until the rescue ship arrives. Then all of you must use my full name in front of my sisters."
"Deal,"
Sheila agreed. "Okay, this is great," I said. "But I want to be very clear. I don't just want things done my way. We're all on the same team, you know. I look for ideas from everyone, and we'll do the ones that make the most sense. It's not like I'm going to order Galmine to make Cord the slow way." I added with a laugh. "I want us to work together in the next few weeks, or we're all going to die when those birds come and toss us out of our cave."
"Dear Victor,"
Trell said while sounding very bored.
Using my name doesn't make us friends. Call your methods whatever you'd like. You will most likely have poor judgment while doing everything with minimal efficiency. I happen to enjoy pointing out your shortcomings, so that will be my new hobby.
I'll show you how Trell helped me. Galmine started to reach for some leaves. It was really quite clever.
No, Trell interjected. For this, I would enjoy showing Victor where he failed.
She flashed her fangs like she'd caught me in her web and was about to take a bite. But instead of sinking those teeth into me, she dropped to her human feet and retracted her spider legs. I avoided looking at her spider parts until she was seated next to the fire over by Galmine.
It is childishly simple, Trell said while picking up some of the strands still lying in our original pile.
Her voice was soothing and measured, like she was a preschool teacher.
All you need to do is this.
She stretched her right leg flat on the ground so it pointed directly at me from the far side of the fire. Her flowing silk dress hiked up above her knee, and she made no effort to block my view beneath it. She used both of her hands to smooth the dress over her flexed upper thigh, so she had a flat workspace. I was convinced she'd positioned herself to give my insides a sexual tug, but then she lifted a couple of strands and laid them flat on her thigh.
Galmine's fingers aren't meant for this kind of detail work. Any good leader can see that, but she is able to roll these together like this.
Trell took two of the strands, put them side by side on her thigh, and began to roll them under her palms, using her dress to keep them from sliding around. I was amazed to see her twist the two strands side by side, and then form a spiral with both, to make one stronger piece of cord. It was much faster than doing everything with fingers alone. That's amazing, I admitted, after watching her for a minute. Thank you, Trell. The dark-haired woman looked up from her handiwork and searched my eyes for a moment before brushing the leaves off her dress. Her movement was rushed, as if the leaves on her lap had suddenly caught fire.
This is all stupid, anyway,
Trell pouted as she pointed to the fish.
Let's get this meal over and done with so I can go back to waiting for rescue.
Galmine adjusted the flat cooking rock by pulling it toward her with her gray fingers. Doesn't that hurt? I asked as she touched the hot rock without flinching.
Not at all, the gray-skinned cheerleader said with a cute little laugh. It takes something really hot to bother me, though sometimes my insides also get very hot and bothered.
She batted her eyelashes at me.
I felt my cheeks warm up with all the sexual energy swirling inside me.
I was in danger of having my whole day derailed if I started thinking of what Galmine said to me last night, what Sheila said about sex while we were at the lake, or how Trell flaunted her body when she walked out of her nook. The spider woman's lean leg was still outstretched in a suggestive manner. So I got to my feet to combat my urges.
Victor, you haven't eaten,
Sheila said, as if worried I was going to walk off without taking a bite. I was practically starving, so she had nothing to worry about on that point. However, I was an expert at eating fast food in my truck, and a working lunch was exactly what I needed. I'll eat, I replied. Don't worry about it. I just have to think about what we need to do afterward. Having some of the cordage done took off a little of the pressure. It also felt good to know Galmine was more than capable of the task I'd given her. However, the anxiety of building a new camp would never go away. After lunch, I had many more choices to make. I honestly didn't care who came up with the ideas to help us survive the next few weeks, but someone needed to do it. Each of the women brought their own strengths and talents, but a lifetime of playing real-time strategy games gave me organizational knowledge they didn't seem to have. We were going to need to plan and execute if we wanted to live. It sucked that I was here in this shitty situation, but a spark of excitement burned deep inside me when I thought about what I had to do on this world. It was like empire building, real-time strategy, and first-person survival, all wrapped into one deadly package, and it all fell on my shoulders. I needed to use my expertise and figure out how to beat this. One big problem, besides getting eaten by dinos, was time management. I didn't know exactly how much time we had, nor did I know precisely how long it would take to build a shelter to complete our fort. There were a million other variables I couldn't control, and who knows how many waypoints we'd have to cross on our way to the goal. Sitting around staring at my sexy roommates would do nothing to help that long-term objective, so I needed to keep us moving forward, even during meals. After Galmine gave some fish to Trell, who had to be first, and then Sheila, she handed the rock with the rest to me. "Don't you want any?" I asked as I held the stone out to her.
"I don't eat meat," Galmine answered with a smile. "I will if there's nothing else to eat, but I still have plenty of berries. You can finish the rest of this, and I'll cook more of the fish for dinner tonight."
I looked to Sheila and Trell, wondering if either would need more to eat. Sheila shook her head and smiled. Trell kept silent and didn't demand my portion like she did with the turtle soup. "Thank you," I said as I picked up the hot fillet. It flaked in my hand and melted in my mouth as I shoveled it all in.
"Oh my God,"
I mumbled with a mouthful of fish as I stood in front of the three seated women.
"Galmine, that was seriously awesome. Thank you.
Also, can you look at the clay we brought in? Think you can work on making another water pot this afternoon?" I considered keeping her on the cordage production, but clay would have to heat and dry for a long time. Better to get it started as soon as possible.
"You're welcome, and yes,"
Galmine replied with a glowing smile as she looked at the clay.
"This is exactly what I need. I'm sure we have enough for one pot, but I might be able to get two."
"Will it be ready for tomorrow's water duties?" Sheila asked as she rose.
"Yes, I'll fashion it this afternoon and sit here at our hearth so I can watch as it bakes. It'll be hardened and ready by tomorrow,"
Galmine said.
"Doesn't it take like a week to work with clay?"
I inquired.
"I don't know why I remembered it, but we fired clay flower pots in grade school.
I also recall thinking it took a lot longer to dry than I thought."
"It helps to know about rocks,"
Galmine said with a wink. She set the cooking stone by the fire and swished her silver hair away from her face as she continued to speak.
"I guess it would take a lot longer if one of you made them, but I'm able to speed things up."
"Aren't you glad you know me?"
"Oh, yeah, I am."
I laughed and mentally shook my head at the awkward attempt to flirt back. I looked at Sheila to try and hide my embarrassment.
"Sheila, are you ready to go cut down some trees while she does that? If we can get a few chopped and into position, we can get a sense for how long it will take to create the new camp."
In my head, I visualized any number of harvester or explorer units starting a new structure in the middle of nowhere. But in those games, the interface always told you how long it would be until it was ready. That helped plan defense or delay the bad guys until it was built. Erecting a small section of the fort would go a long way toward helping me figure out our timeline.
"We can use my cutting rock, but it'll be difficult,"
Sheila admitted. "I'd like to see what we can do," I said.
"Eventually, we can use the axe blade Trell, discarded, but it will take time to put together a handle. Maybe we can cut a few logs with your rock just to get us started this afternoon. I didn't know how long it would take to craft a new axe, but we already had a basic one, so I wanted to see that in action first."
"And what about me?"
Trell asked seriously.
"What would you have me do?"
I looked at her, wondering if she'd come around to my way of thinking, but I picked up the subtle sarcasm in her words. Her crooked smirk also suggested she wasn't asking out of any renewed sense of community service.
"Would you like to wait back there for rescue?" I said while pointing over her shoulder to her nook.
"Ah, we finally understand each other. Your decision-making skills are excellent, for once."
Trell got up and started back to her private space.
"But if you wanted to help Galmine make more cordage, we could really use you," I added as I watched her and her alien wings stride away.
"And you had to ruin it,"
she said with a sigh.
"Typical male behavior, after all."
She never turned around, but stopped just short of her curtain and shook her head in disappointment. After a short pause, she shut herself behind the partition. Sheila picked up her cutting stone and directed me toward the entrance. We both grabbed spears, and I trailed her outside and onto the ramp.
"Do you see a suitable place to construct your fort?"
Sheila asked when we reached the bottom of the ramp.
"Our fort," I corrected her. There were several patches of open ground in the grove of redwoods, though picking one near the cave was going to be key. We wanted it far enough away from the birds, but close enough we could reach the cave if we had to retreat there during construction.
"Right below her," I suggested as I pointed to the nearest sequoia 30 yards away. The pterodactyl sat on a branch 100 feet up the trunk, but she wasn't going to stop us. The open ground at the base of the Redwood Giant was perfect for laying out a squarish fort.
"Can we use the big tree as one corner of our enclosure?"
she suggested as she pointed to the redwood.
"Great idea," I replied. "That'll save us construction time. And we can climb the tree if we need another means of escape." I stood there for a moment and relaxed my shoulders. I'd been tense, not only because we had so much to do, but also because of my run-in with Trell. However, I'd just proven the Spider-Woman wrong. I'd accepted Sheila's suggestion in a heartbeat. What mattered were good ideas, not that those ideas were mine. "So, all that's left is to cut a few hundred trees down," I joked as I tried to forget about Trell.
"This hand axe only works on very small trees,"
Sheila continued while we stood in the hot afternoon sunshine.
"You would be lucky to cut through a tree bigger than what you can grasp with both hands."
She made a circle with her cute furry fingers to show me a ring of maybe 6 inches in width. "We only need to start with a few," I said, "just enough to see how this process is going to work. Like those trees over there." I pointed along the hillside near the grazing triceratops.
"I see the one we need."
Sheila walked me to a dead tree with light-colored bark that had been scraped all the way around by an animal. Without the ring of bark, the oak-like tree had died.
"This caught my eye because it was already dead. Without the leaves, you can see how straight it is."
She tossed her spear to the ground a few feet from the base of the dead tree. While in a crouch, she gripped the cutting stone in her right hand and slammed it hard against the wood. She repeated the motion about 20 times before stopping to look at what she'd done. The cut was maybe 1 inch deep and 3 inches long on that side of the trunk. "Hold up," I said during her pause. "Let me take a crack."
"Of course."
She gave me the rock and I handed her my spear. I took the stone and gripped it just as she had done. It was less of an axe and more of a palm-sized rock that happened to have a thin, sharp edge to it. "Here goes," I said. I swung my hand in the same downward motion Sheila used, so my blow landed right in the wedge of exposed wood.
"Fuck me!"
I shouted.
"It is painful,"
Sheila agreed without any of my emotion.
"And you cut all those saplings in the cave using this thing?"
"The trees I felled for spears were much smaller, and the axe does take some getting used to,"
she replied. I experimented with holding the rock in different ways, as well as hitting the tree at different angles. Every hit remained just as painful as the first. The only thing that helped was using less force, but those blows hardly left impressions in the wood. After striking a few more times as hard as I could, the gash in the tree was only another 1/2 inch deep. So I switched the rock to my left hand and fanned my throbbing right hand to cool it off.
"I don't know about this,"
I said while looking at our handiwork.
"It doesn't seem very efficient."
"It is not, but it is all we have currently."
Sheila held out her hand so she could take the next turn, and I was happy to trade the rock for my spear. While she cracked the stone against the tree, I wondered if I'd made a mistake by putting off the axe-building task. It would take all afternoon to cut down the tree if we did it 1/2 inch at a time, and our hands would be ruined from all the pain. Sooner than I wanted, Sheila held the rock out for me to take another turn.
"Thanks,"
I said with friendly sarcasm as I took it. "I'm going to lay this spear against the tree. We can't hold them every moment we're out here." I immediately thought about putting emergency spears every 10 feet along our walking paths. I waited for a minute to rest, and then hit the tree as hard as I could for those 20 chops. My hands screamed in agony, but I did manage to make a noticeable cut that time, almost like the tree was softer toward the middle. I stood back to look at our handiwork, and was pleased to see we were about halfway through the 6-inch base.
"A little more and we can tip over the tree,"
Sheila announced as she looked at the depth of the cut.
"It'll break off and save us the effort."
"Does this hurt your hands as much as it does for mine?"
It sounded stupid once I'd said it, but she wasn't human and maybe she didn't feel pain the same way.
"Very much, yes. I could hardly move my fingers the day after I cut wood for those spears. However, the spears had to be made."
Her declaration made me appreciate her simple work ethic. It wasn't that she didn't feel pain, she just didn't let it get in her way.
"Well, let's see if we can cut this down," I said while doing my best to ignore the extreme pain as I mashed the rock into the notch.
A minute later, I sensed the tree was about to tip, so I pushed on the bark with my shoulder until the whole tree shifted.
"Timber!"
I shouted as I jumped back. The tree crumpled right at our cut and toppled into its neighbors with rips and cracks. The branches on the downed side of the tree shattered when it finally struck the ground, and I felt a smile spread across my mouth. The noise spooked the nearby trikes, and they galloped away for a short distance before resuming their feeding. The largest of the black-striped beasts kept its eyes on me, and I found it interesting they were heading back in the direction of the lake, as if they'd already forgotten the danger there.
"I should have tried to tame one of those trikes," I remarked.
"They could push over trees without us having to cut them at all."
"Perhaps that would work," Sheila replied, "but we would still have to cut them so they line up when we place them for walls."
"Okay, Miss Negative," I shot back in a playful voice.
"Then we can use them to drag the trees to the worksite. We're going to need a lot of wood, more than what is right here in this clump of little ones."
"Shall I wait for you to tame one?"
Sheila answered. It was difficult to tell by her demeanor if she was serious or having fun with me, but I took it as a joke and chuckled. "I don't know if my ability will work on them, and they look a bit angry to me. If we could get one alone, I'd try. But remember the run from the lake? They could kill both of us easily if we pissed them off." I watched the trikes a little while longer, but then turned back to the job in front of me. The fallen tree had splintered where we chopped it, but it didn't separate from the stump completely, so we still had some cutting to do.
"We could use a saw,"
I added with dismay. I suspected there were dozens of tools we could build to expedite the construction process, but I had no idea what they were, and no access to an internet search.
"Allow me,"
Sheila said while extending her hand to take the rock. I admired her athletic forearm and shoulder muscles as she pounded the axe. The tree finally snapped off the stub of the trunk, and I helped her push it over.
"Let's use the branches to drag it to where we want to build, and then we can chop all this extra stuff off later," I suggested.
"I like that idea," Sheila replied. "We will cut off the top part when we have the better axe. While we drag it, let us lay our spears in the tree canopy so we have them close."
She threaded her spear into the tangle of branches, so it would ride along with us, and I did the same with mine. We each took a side of the 30-foot tree and lifted the heavier bottom end using the lowest branches. That made it easy to drag the lighter end across 50 or 60 feet of open terrain. We let it drop when we reached the somewhat cleared area where we planned to build.
"Should we have a ceremony?"
I suggested in a half-serious way. If our new camp was going to be built from a forest of little trees, the log we dragged was the very first piece of it, so maybe it deserved a bit of recognition? Even though we were in a hurry, and my hands were on fire from cutting our first tree, I was willing to spare 60 seconds on ceremony. As long as there weren't velociraptors nipping at me.
"Do your people recognize such things?" Sheila asked. "We have no such tradition."
"Well, maybe." In one of the few times I'd gone downtown in Los Angeles, I recalled seeing cornerstones with dates and stuff, so that's where I probably got the idea. "How about this?" I yanked off my hat and held it tight against my chest. I briefly entertained the idea of singing the national anthem, but I wasn't a very good singer. It was also a bad idea to make unnecessary noise with predators nearby. I settled for a quick dedication, glad for the chance to rest my aching hands. "Here begins the site for our first structure in dinosaur land. May it last for a generation and keep our tribe safe." I put the leather hat back on my sweaty head and glanced at Sheila. "Good?"
"Very good. Although I hope Trell's sisters do rescue us," she said with a feline smile.
"Amen," I said with total agreement. Moving the tree was the least painful part of the long process. I estimated it took us an hour to cut it down and another 10 minutes to get it where we wanted it. Even some simple back-of-the-napkin math told me it would take days to cut down all the trees we needed for the walls, even if we greatly improved our efficiency. I looked into the tangle of branches while I did my calculations and noticed something interesting.
"Shit!
Sheila, check this out!" I waved her over, and she stood next to me and looked into the tree just as I was doing. If it had been upright in the ground, we'd be looking straight down into the branches.
"I'm afraid I do not see it. What are you looking at?"
she replied while studiously examining the tree.
"If we dragged this up to the cave entrance and stuck the long end inside, these pointed branches would face outward. Do you see it now?"
It was obvious to me because this tree was already dead and most of the leaves had fallen off.
if you did that, it would prevent anyone from gaining entrance to the cave, she said. This serves the same function as the turnstile.
The tree for our door doesn't have to be as tall as this one, I suggested. In fact, we need it to be smaller so we can easily move it around. We can leave it open during the day, but pull the tree further into the cave at night, or when there are threats around. The branches would clog up the entrance, and most of them would point outward toward the threat. I didn't think the tangle of branches would keep out any of the largest wildlife, but maybe a huge T-Rex wouldn't even fit through the cave opening at all. I would have preferred to build an elaborate gate with spear points and axe blades to hold off any and all dinosaurs. But if the tree did most of that without the build time, it was the way to go. Despite the pain, we cut down the next tree a lot faster. It was about 3 inches in diameter, maybe 20 feet tall, and had a bushy canopy of leaves which was perfect for our doorway. I held it as best I could when Sheila made the final cut so it would not smash over and break all its branches. I can't wait to hear Trell complain about this, I confided as we began dragging the tree toward the ramp.
She is difficult, but do not sell yourself short, the sexy feline woman said as if we were taking a pleasant walk. You want a major concession from her.
You mean that she said my name? I guessed.
Yes. I had to repeat her full name for several days before I realized she would accept the shorter version. Her unreasonable behavior extends to all of us. But your unconventional methods seem to draw her out much faster than mine did.
What methods did you use? I asked with a bit of surprise, since I couldn't really believe Sheila's words.
I treated her as an equal, she said.
But I've tried to treat her that way too, I stated as we walked.
Yes, but you've not been afraid to stand up to her when she's in the wrong. Also, you have come up with good reasons why she should help us. And you've somehow gotten her to make contributions to our team. I think she's responding to your leadership.
That's crazy, I said as we dragged the leafy tree up the ramp by its lowest branches. She hates me.
Based on the little she's told me, her society is very regimented. She respects powerful leaders, even those she dislikes, though she only has female rulers on her planet.
But she didn't follow you, I said in a quiet voice as we neared the cave. You seem like a good leader.
My society has its own rules, Victor. I have no interest in leading her, and I do not think she would let me, even if I desired it. She tolerated our arrangement while it was just the three of us women because she could pretend to be in charge. However, it is tough to lead if you never depart the cave. By going outside with me and coming up with the idea for our new camp, you've made it clear who's our leader.
I stopped us a few yards from the dark maw of the cave and considered her words. Sheila had been grooming me to take over from Trell. I was flattered, but a little scared by how I missed the whole thing as it happened.
I know what you're thinking, Victor, she whispered. You believe that Trell will never accept you as the leader of our little tribe. Perhaps she'll never openly admit it, the way Galmine and I do. However, reality will pursue and capture her as surely as those birds. When you lead by example, she will have no choice but to follow your directions.
Sheila, thanks for your vote of confidence, but I haven't really done anything yet, I said.
I can see why you would say that, Sheila said in a supportive voice. You are looking ahead to your list of unfinished challenges, and you seldom reflect on what has changed. This turnstile is but the latest, and look how fast you came up with the idea. You retrieved water with me, carried the fish, and watched over us as we slipped. But that is not why you are a leader, Victor. Those are just actions. You are a leader because you bring us a plan full of hope. Without that, we would still be living day to day and hiding inside the cave.
And you're sure you don't want... I started to say before she held up her hand to halt me.
Stop. I know you wonder why I do not lead. As I said, my society has its customs. I treated Trell as my equal because that is what she would be on my world. The women of our tribe follow male leaders exclusively, never another female. It is just how things are.
Sheila said it in a way which suggested she wasn't going to argue about it. Her words encouraged me, and I gave her a quick smile. I felt like I was good at this kind of stuff because I was great at playing real-time strategy games. But now I was in charge of a trio of beautiful women, and one mess-up could cost us our lives. I've been trying to stay a step ahead in my planning, but her words made me realize I needed to stay 5 ahead. I'm really honored you'd think that about me. Thank you for your help. I wouldn't be able to do any of this without you. I wasn't sure if I should salute her as some kind of military honor for her service, or kiss her because she had figured out all the political stuff without me knowing about it. Since we both held the branches of the tree on the narrow path to the cave, I couldn't do either.
You are welcome. Now, let us get this to where it belongs and cross off one of the numerous tasks from your list.
She leaned forward, and together we dragged the tree about 10 feet inside the cave, just shy of Galmine and the fire. The large canopy of branches and leaves remained outside the cave with enough room for us to walk by in single file. If a threat showed up, we could pull the trunk deeper into the cave, which would snug up the branches, so they blocked the exit completely. It was a 10-cent solution to a $1 million problem, but it would work. "You and Trell can pull this tree barrier closed when we're gone," I said to Galmine while she watched us.
"You are assigning work for me?"
Trell called out from behind her silk curtain.
"I'll put that in my daily affirmations journal, along with all the other manual labor I'm absolutely not doing for you."
I looked at the two other women and wondered if I should respond. After all Sheila just told me, I didn't think a leader would respond to such insults, so I decided to ignore the spider princess.
"You two are my heroes," Galmine said.
She faced the tree barricade and spoke to us as if Trell hadn't said anything.
"When you get that pot finished, you'll be mine," I said.
We'd been out in the heat of the day cutting down trees and dragging them around. Back home, I might have downed several large sports drinks after the same amount of effort. But here, my sporty drink was a few nasty swigs of tepid lake water. We'd soon have more water on the job site thanks to her.
"I would like to be yours,"
the green-eyed woman said in a sultry voice without taking her eyes from her clay.
"Gag!"
Trell spat with disgust from her spot behind the curtain. "Okay," I said to Galmine while I ignored Trell. "I'm glad this is gonna work, but we have to get back to chopping. We'll be right outside." Sheila and I pushed the turnstile tree back out of the way and yanked our spears from inside the branches. When we stepped outside, the pterodactyl shrieked in the trees above us as if to register a complaint. "Well, she's one threat we can push to the back burner," I said as Sheila and I stood there on the ramp. "She definitely won't get through the barricade."
"Agreed," the blonde woman said. "The felled tree was the perfect substitute for the turnstile. What is the next task you wish to eliminate?"
The feline warrior almost seemed like she was hoping for more work.
"I don't think I'm going to be much use with that cutting stone. We need to make a proper axe with a handle, so we don't have to kill ourselves getting 1,000 trees, or however many we need for the fort."
I thought again of taming the trikes to help us, but they were almost out of sight.
"Would you like me to continue to cut trees or do something else?" she asked, bringing my attention back to what was in front of us. "Perhaps I could gather firewood since we had to delay that job while we got the water at the lake."
"We have a few hours to do whatever you can get done," I said, while giving her a wide grin. "I don't think I need to micromanage you, do I? But if you like to be told what to do, I'm sure I could think of something."
"We just recently talked about how I wish you to lead me, so I would like for you to tell me what to do."
Her expression was very difficult to read, but I saw a strange glow in her feline eyes, so it took me a few moments to think how to respond. "All right," I replied. "Why don't you get firewood for Galmine? We need to keep the fire lit all night. I'm going to find our axe handle." I wasn't sure she was serious about wanting me to assign a job to her, and I kept waiting for her to say she was joking. However, instead of laughing it off, she gave me a little Sheila nod and then went down the ramp. She said it was her people's custom to be led by males, but her funny expression made me wonder if she was flirting with me. But why would a married alien warrior woman flirt like that? I carried my spear down the ramp and started talking myself out of the flirting idea. It was much more likely she was a product of her culture and simply felt more comfortable being led by a man. I was just a guy in the right place at the right time, and it had nothing whatsoever to do with any attraction. Thoughts of Sheila flirting with me lingered while I looked for an axe handle. I needed something about 3 feet long that I could easily grip with my hand. It had to be from a live branch or sapling, because the dried firewood was way too brittle. Finally, it also had to be thick, so I could cut a narrower slot near one end to insert the rock Trell gave us. Sheila was picking up firewood close by, but before I realized it, she had set a bundle of sticks near the base of the ramp and was leaning on her spear next to me.
I need to forage further out into the grove. I've gathered most firewood from near the cave, Sheila said, while seeming to wait for something.
Can you use the branches from the trees we'll cut down? I asked.
From the dead tree, yes, when we have the better axe, she answered, but not the others. The wood is too green, and it'll make too much smoke in the cave.
Ah, that makes sense, I replied. Be careful.
Thank you,
she replied, and I watched her tight, fuzzy ass cheeks bounce as she walked away.
Damn, she was really hot.
But I was also hot. I'd been sweating my ass off in my heat-trapping uniform, so I took off the long-sleeved shirt in an effort to keep cool. Underneath, I wore a white undershirt with short sleeves, but it didn't help in the humid air of the redwood forest, so I used my hat to fan myself while I continued my search. Since the hand axe was so painful to use, I had to be sure whatever I cut down was going to be what I needed. I wandered by many saplings and under a lot of almost ripe branches. Eventually, I found an ideal branch low enough to the ground I could cut it down. I got busy with the small stone axe and soon had even bigger rivers of sweat pouring from my forehead. It took another half hour of agonized chopping before I cut it off the tree. When it was down and in my hands, I felt satisfied it would be the perfect axe handle.
Looking good, Victor? I like you without your clothes on.
Galmine walked down the ramp at her usual slow pace and beckoned me over to her. I'm still wearing clothes, I replied as I neared her and set down my axe handle. I wondered if her people ever wore clothes or if they all walked around looking like gray versions of Mystique.
You still owe me something soft.
She paused speaking as she stepped a little closer to me.
And something hard.
I finally noticed the water pot she'd put down on one of the rocks. Apparently, she'd come down to give me a drink, though I suddenly lost interest in quenching my thirst. I double-blinked in disbelief. It was my first private moment Galmine and I had since last night, but I wasn't used to a beautiful woman being so bold with me. Her green eyes were full of mischief, and her round breasts carried no evidence of the simulated bikini top she usually wore. Her mysterious gray skin still seemed rock-like, but in the sunshine, I was able to see it bend and flex like human skin. Her delightful perfume caught my nose, and it was insane how much I wanted to feel her skin.
"And I want to show you,"
she began to say. I refocused on her eyes, aware that she had come out at this exact moment for more than water. She telegraphed her desire for a first kiss, and I leaned toward her to deliver it. But a screeching sound behind her made us both jump before our lips met.
What the fuck?
I gasped as I moved to stand in front of the beautiful woman. I recognized Jinx's high-pitched shrieking, so I started up the ramp to see what he'd found. I grabbed Galmine's hand and began to pull her along toward the safety of the cave, but she wouldn't move with any haste.
I can't run, Victor,
she said with unusual insistence in her voice.
You've got to help Jinx go!
There was no time to argue, so I let go of her hand and raced up the ramp.
Sheila, help!
I shouted into the forest with the hope that Sheila was close enough to sprint back in the next few seconds. As I reached the entrance to the cave, I saw two birds tumbling around inside the leafy branches of the small tree Sheila and I'd placed by the door. One of them was orange-colored, and the other was the familiar blue of my buddy.
Jinx!
I screamed his name because I feared he'd already been hurt in the melee. Jinx was at a huge size disadvantage against the larger turkey-sized bird. He was able to peck at the plump orange and black bird to annoy it, but then he jumped around the inside branches to avoid the razor-sharp counterattacks. I remembered the rock Sheila gave me last night, and I pulled it from my pocket. I couldn't climb inside the branches to help Jinx, but I could try to even the odds. I wound up, aimed, and waited a couple of seconds until I had a clear shot. I threw it. And somehow hit the orange bird square on the head, which sent it tumbling to the ground. I was on the verge of ordering Jinx to get the hell out of there, but my blue buddy hopped excitedly in the branches above the larger bird, and I could sense what he wanted.
Kill it!
I shouted.
I hated using Jinx for the task, but I didn't have a weapon handy to take care of the orange bird, and I was worried it might recover and then go after my little friend again. Jinx dropped through the inside branches and landed upon the stunned orange bird. He tore at him with his small but deadly claws and repeatedly pecked at its head with his own sharp beak. The orange bird made a brief effort to fight back, but Jinx had made a mess of its neck and continued to poke at it until it was clear it would never get up again. A few seconds later, Jinx hopped out of the tree and immediately started to peck the ground for food. As if oblivious, he'd survived a fight to the death. He had some rumpled feathers from his ordeal, but didn't seem to be injured.
"Good work, buddy,"
I said as he walked around near my feet. "I'm so glad you weren't hurt." My heart still beat with nervousness at how close I'd come to losing the little guy. Like the many times before, Jinx had been right there when new danger found me. I had a pretty good idea what the orange bird was doing here and why Jinx saw it as a threat.
"Victor?"
Sheila called from somewhere near the bottom of the ramp. I couldn't see her through all the bushes lining our path, but I knew she was close.
"We're good! Come up here, Sheila!"
I called down to her. I dragged the bird free of the branches and studied it. The creature had remarkably orange feathers over most of its body, but had black ones covering its wings. The long yellow beak reminded me of a stork's, but it was crammed with seemingly endless rows of teeth. It was safe to say my blue pal was lucky to be alive. I ran it through the IQ, hoping we could glean a little information about the species threatening us, but no data came out. I wondered how the aliens could not know about a species on a planet they created, but after a few more seconds of concerned thought, I wondered if it failed to return data because the damn thing was dead. Conceptually, I always knew the deadly birds were coming. Sheila was there when they took over her first cave, and she even mentioned seeing one of the orange scouts a few days ago, but having this one on the literal doorstep to our cave made it inevitable. They were just as serious a threat as whatever super predator ran down the Triceratops. If there were 10 or 20 of them flapping those vicious beaks at us, we'd be in a crapload of trouble. Sheila said she was overwhelmed by hundreds. Whether it was tomorrow or next month, we had no time to dick around. This new camp needed to be built quickly.
"Is everyone all right?"
Sheila asked as she trotted up the ramp with a spear in her hand. There was recognition in her eyes when she saw the orange and black body lying on the ground, and she let out a long exhale. "This is the type of bird that's coming, isn't it?" I asked the blonde woman.
"Yes,"
Sheila answered with disappointment.
"They found us. Were there others?"
"Just the one Jinx fought," I said. The blue bird continued to nose the ground as if nothing important was taking place around him. Galmine finally reached the top of our ramp. As the three of us stared at the dead bird, I thought of what came next. All the talk of leadership and planning made me realize how important each decision was going to be for our survival. These women were my responsibility. Get one thing wrong, and one of them could die. Suddenly, there weren't enough hours left in the day for all the shit I had to get done.
Chapter 9.
After the fight between Jinx and the orange stork bird, I gathered firewood, scrounged to collect more leaves for cord making, ate fish for dinner, and went to get more water with Sheila. It was almost pitch black before I was back at the fireside, and I began to make progress on carving the handle. It needed to be completed tonight so we could cut trees a lot faster tomorrow. The fort was the only thing that would keep us safe outside the cave, and the axe was the key to my time crunch problem.
"I hope you realize how futile this is,"
Trell said in her lecturer's voice as the rest of us sat around the fireplace working on our projects.
"Victor has got you two running around doing all this nonsense. And what has it gotten you? Nothing but a couple of logs toppled, these ugly ropes you're making, and the bush in our front door."
Sheila and Galmine sat on either side of me, and I saw the gray-skinned woman force a smile to her full lips. They both ripped leaves and twisted cord while I worked on carving a 4-inch slit in the upper portion of my new axe handle with a flint knife. Trell spent the last few minutes going over all the things I'd done wrong today. But she hit one nugget of truth. Even though we hardly stopped for rest, we really hadn't gotten very much done.
"And these mysterious birds,"
Trell continued.
"Aren't going to get in and eat us. Did you see how small it was? There was hardly any meat."
I wasn't even sure Trell saw the bird when it was alive because Jinx killed it just outside the cave. When Sheila got a hold of it, she stripped all the feathers and cut it to shreds with a stone axe. At first I thought she was doing it because she was mad the birds had found us, but I should have known better.